Tag, meine lieben Freunde. Ich heiße Stuart Butler, and I can't do any more German than that, but I'm joined today with Adam Stoker. How are
I
you?
was not ready, Stuart. I was not ready, but I really appreciate the German intro.
I did like a year of German in high school, but the reason I'm doing the German today is kind of a shtick because of our guest has a last name that's actually a German word for church. But welcome to the show, Eddie Kirsch. How are you?
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me. Some fun trivia. My last name means cherry in German. And at my wedding, which is now like 8 years or 9 years ago, we served a like cherry themed, cocktail for sunset hours. So there you go. That's
Well,
a
the
little bit
joke's
of
on
German
me.
education
Yeah,
for
I
you
thought it meant
guys in
church,
your
and
audience.
you're saying it means cherry. So,
We just went through this whole thing because you were proud that you knew that his last name meant
yeah.
church,
So, oh
and
wow.
it's cherry.
I think church might be with a C then. It's something very similar to that. Oh well.
Oh, this made my day
Yeah.
already.
Sorry to all the German listeners. We do have a couple of German listeners, so apologies for the brutal bad accent. But I did try, and hopefully I got the words right. So, but it's okay. Adam, how you doing, man?
You know what? I'm doing great. I feel like, you and I recorded an episode yesterday, and maybe we won't share with the Desties which episode it was that we recorded yesterday. But man, I felt rusty, and I'm feeling a little bit more like I've got my feet underneath me. I'm ready to do a solid job today and bring my A game to this
Yeah,
episode.
we're breaking the fourth wall a little bit, right? But we don't always record in order that we release, so that, you know, and that was the first one back after a little atrophy set in. I think you and I both took a little break there between the over the holidays, and so I agree. I didn't bring my A game either, so okay. Hopefully, our B game is good enough for this audience. But you know
Well,
what? Today.
That'd be a fun game. We should ask our Desties to guess which episode it was that we're describing,
Oh wow.
once it releases, and then we'll see. Oh, we thought you were bad on this one and that one, and it won't even be the one we're talking
I
about.
don't see anything good coming from that. I'm going to go ahead and say hard no to that. But today we're not going to bring our B game. We're going to bring our A game. And Eddie, I know you're going to bring some fun conversation. I like people like you that come at it from a different perspective, Eddie. You're more of on the data side, right? You want to describe real quick your role with Visit St. Pete Clearwater?
Yeah. I mean, I've kind of found myself in an interesting position, and it truly goes back to like part of just what I've always naturally been interested by. So went to school for journalism and worked a little bit in the world of kind of content, but also in that area was very interested in the data and performance. So I've always kind of had 2 feet in different places. One is really trying to think about content and content as a storytelling means. And then the other side of it is also kind of the data. And I've been interested, in working in Big Bear and now Visit St. Pete Clearwater, really in kind of how people make decisions about, their choices and vacation and what information can affect that. And I kind of see, those two things as being interestingly connected, certainly a part of my career that I've dedicated, myself to while I've been in destination marketing.
Yeah, interesting. You know, we've had some episodes recently where we've talked about sort of the storytelling side, and we're talking about the audience for that. Because, and it seems like you sort of sit in that middle where you're looking at storytelling both to the visitors, but also to your local audience, right? You're having to just justify your existence and your metrics and stuff through storytelling. So it's kind of interesting. I'm sure we'll dig into that deeper as we go on with the episode. But before we get into that topic, it is the time. Eddie, you're in for a treat. This is the greatest segment in all of entertainment. And Adam, tell me, did we bring in the old school, the new school? Where are we at these days?
Oh yeah, no, don't have the new jingle ready to roll. In fact, when we floated that idea, we even got pushback from our guest on the episode that we talked about that. So I'll work on a new jingle, but yeah, it won't be this episode.
It's an A/B
I'm
test.
going to chime in here and say the jingle from listening to it several times, it never gets old from just the appreciation of someone listening to it.
Eddie, you can come back anytime. I don't care how the rest of the episode goes. You are a staple of the show from this point forward.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to hardly dis hard disagree there. It's
Oh, sorry,
one
I can't hear you.
exaggeration for you.
Stuart, I can't hear you.
Oh, man. No lyric. Oh, they had lyrics down there. Oh, but Eddie's dancing. Look at that.
Oh, yeah.
He can join Caleb and Jennifer in the dance hall.
Made my day, Eddie.
It doesn't take much, does it? So today's Stu's News. Amazon just announced, they've been dabbling with this Alexa Plus concept. I don't know if you guys have Alexa devices in your home. I have literally about, I think last count, 18 or 19, have set it up to control everything. Like it's in every room, like all our TVs, all our lights, all the thermostat, all the things, all our cameras. Like we're pretty an early adopter, heavy user. But it sucks. It sucks. Like the actual intelligence of the platform sucks. It's great for automation, home automation. It's not great for much beyond that. And they've released this Alexa Plus, which is free right now to anyone that's a Prime user. But they'll probably charge something at some point, right? It's not that much better. But what they just announced is now Amazon Plus has a chat interface. So they've just, if you go to alexa.com, you can sign up, whether you have Echo or Alexa devices or not, you can sign up and use it like an LLM, like anything else. You can upload files, you can do the same thing. So essentially, this is a alternative to a Gemini or to a ChatGPT or whatever, name your LLM of choice. And so I just think this is interesting that one, Amazon's going this route, right? It's sort of as a tip of where they think they can corner the market or at least get some penetration. But it's also contextually, I think it's relevant because we've seen data recently that's coming out that ChatGPT has had the dominant market share. It's been over 70% of the market for LLMs for pretty much since it launched. But it seems to be slipping. It slipped just below 70%, still by far the biggest. But if you just look at December alone, it dropped. It actually dropped usage by about 6%. And then if you look at Gemini, it increased in the same time by 30%. Now, Gemini is still in the 1 billion plus something versus the 5 billion plus that we're seeing with ChatGPT. But we're seeing some shifts. And I think I just wanted to have a little conversation because anecdotally, I'm hearing a lot of people that are shifting to Gemini and saying that Gemini is becoming a little more valuable to them than ChatGPT. So gonna throw that to you, Adam, first, and see any response to this on the Alexa side or the shifting sands.
Yeah, it's funny because if I would have really thought this through early on, I feel like I should have seen some of this coming. And the reason I say that is ChatGPT had the luxury of being first, and I think that is such an opportunity, especially for someone who's breaking into a market. And when we talk about data and technology and even, just consumer behavior, ChatGPT was new. They were brand new. But Google and Amazon and other companies like Meta have the existing user base that allows them to build integrated products that provide additional convenience that ChatGPT is playing catch up on, right? So when you look at Gemini, you already use Gmail. At least most people already use Gmail. You already use Google Search. You already use a lot of
Google Drive,
existing Google
right?
Drive, Google Docs, Google, all that kind of stuff. And you start to realize they've already captured so much of the market. They don't need the best AI product in order to get people to use it because they have convenience, and human behavior usually lends itself towards convenience. However, now that in my mind, and I've documented well my battle with ChatGPT on this show, and it forced me to Gemini. Well, Gemini retains context better than ChatGPT ever did for me, and I've been able to have it be much more of a kind of a brain or a subject matter expert on a specific vein that I'm working within. And refer back to previous conversations and stuff in a way that ChatGPT would always forget and would always lose the context. And so I think if this trend continues and Gemini even gets to the point where at scale it's a a product that's on par with ChatGPT, I think ChatGPT will continue to bleed market share. I don't think they'll ever go down to, 10% or something like that. But the idea that they're going to retain 70% market share in the AI space and the LLM space, I just don't think that's realistic. And I think even though like this Alexa Plus thing, I'm not entirely sold that that's going to be something that steals a bunch of market share from ChatGPT. It's just one more slice of the pie that's going to get users in some way, shape, or form. And no matter what, that's probably going to decrease market share for ChatGPT. So I think we're going to see a lot of evening out. And my prediction at this point is I believe that Google is probably going to win the LLM war. Now, what does that mean for robotics and other applications of AI? I'm not ready to say that Google's going to win that. But as it pertains to LLM specifically, I think it's very realistic that ultimately Google wins that battle.
Go on. Annie, you have a take on this one?
Yeah, I mean, I've got a bunch of thoughts. I mean, related to like the Alexa Plus and Alexa.com, part of this gets me kind of interested because we are going through a process of a website redesign, and we're thinking about AI implementation and how people are going to be interacting with the internet. Not in 2026, but like 2027, 2028. Long enough that we. That our website remains a useful product for as long as websites, are going to be useful to the internet, and it's not just going to be AI agents, taking over. And I've had an Alexa since, the first generation. I would say I'm not using it the way that you are, Stuart. I've basically been using it for timers and to play my music, and that's about the extent of my device there. What I kind of get. Like Google Plus vibes a little bit from the Alexa service, and that like they're not the first to market, and they're a little bit behind, especially Gemini. I think honestly, I think I've been using Gemini since the Nano Banana kind of 3 came out, and I used it to summarize thoughts and notes for this meeting. I think it works great, and I think Google is a business that. Probably has enough resources to take over kind of the world when it comes to AI agents. I think that, like you guys have sort of said, ChatGPT can't necessarily keep up, and that's kind of a take I've heard, from other news sources as well. That the projections don't look good for ChatGPT right now. Now, maybe ChatGPT. Gets bought by Microsoft, or that becomes an official merge or something like that. But yeah, I mean, in terms of like the actual Alexa product, as I sort of visited the website and checked it out, and it explored all the things that it could do. I mean, a part of it is really interesting because it's like one of the ideas is plan a tiki party for me. So presumably you would do that, and it would give you the list of items that you need to order from Amazon. To make your child's tiki, party wonderful. But who knows? I don't I'll hold off on like bigger thoughts about it, but that my initial thought was like, okay, this is kind of from a big company that is the maybe third or fourth to market with an AI product. So I don't know how successful it will be, right off the bat.
Yeah, it's interesting to bring up Google Plus. I think a lot of people probably forgot that it even existed. That was Google's attempt at a social media platform at the infancy when Facebook and was taking off, and really even before, video was existed. So it was before TikToks and Instagrams and stuff like that. But there's a couple of things at play here. I think one, history will tell you that the first to market rarely is the winner, right? We go back to AOL. In terms of getting people on the internet, and we can go back to look at search engines, right? Google certainly wasn't the first search engine to market. We had, Ask Jeeves and Excite and InfoSeek and Yahoo even before that, So the chances of ChatGPT maintaining their crown is unlikely. And I think I would never bet against a Google, and I would never bet against an Amazon. I would never bet against an Apple, right? I think that would be foolish. But I think we need to sort of zoom out and say, well, what does this mean for destinations, right? I mean, one, I think it means we as destination marketers, you need to be using multiple tools and not be married to one, right? I think we'll probably have preferences, but we all need to be not putting our eggs in one basket. It's possible at some point ChatGPT runs out of money and goes bust, right? That's unlikely in the near term, but in the long term, it could be a defunct company or at least a shadow of itself in the future and sell its assets, much like Yahoo did. I think they'll probably IPO before it gets to that point, and that'll probably buy them a bit more of a runway. But so I think we've got to, from our own personal function, have to diversify. But we also have to, as someone that is promoting the destination, we also need to think about the consumer's change in behavior and the fact that this will probably be fragmented, right? There will probably be at least three, four, five, or more LLMs or AI devices, personal assistants of choice. And we're going to have to make sure that we're present in doing the right things for all of them. And so I think similar to how we do search engines, but more than that, we might have to end up developing relationships as destinations with these LLMs to make sure we're providing the content, the relevant content in the right way to them, or even unique content that doesn't exist anywhere else. Because potentially, to your point, Eddie, we might not even have a website at some point in the future. So how do we get the information we need to them? So I don't know. I think it's interesting. It's something to watch. I don't love this platform particularly, Amazon Plus. Although they have done some other cool things with AI, I will say Amazon's in release of Rufus in their actual Amazon shopping app is pretty cool. Like you can ask it questions and shop in a bit more of a dynamic way, and they that seems to be working really well for consumers. The data would suggest too. So I think it's kind of cool, man. I think it's kind of cool. Now,
Also,
let's
just
shift
feels
gears.
like, Amazon and Google are taking over literally every space of your life and trying to trying to maximize, their attention on your daily routine.
They have tentacles into us in many forms, right? Whereas ChatGPT right now really only has one tentacle, and it's kind of brittle, that relationship, right? The cost to switch is not that high, and so other than the context that's lost, and canceling a subscription, it's not that high. But we've seen that someone like Google has been able to, even with a brittle relationship like search, they've been able to maintain market share in the 70%+. So, but we'll see. We'll see. Now, Eddie, before we jump into your topic, I do want to point out that you're a big soccer fan, or a football fan, as it should be called, or
Whatever you
football,
call it.
as the Germans call it, if we're going to do a callback to earlier in the episode.
Are you sure?
No, that could mean cherry. It could mean apple pie. I don't know. I'm pretty sure on that one. But you had interacted with a question we put on LinkedIn about the World Cup, and I think I've got some strong opinions on it. But I just, real briefly, before we jump into your topic, I'd love to hear a little bit of your take on what you said on LinkedIn and what your opinion is there.
Yeah, well, I mean, first off, for all the destinations that are hosting a World Cup game, I have envy, and I don't like you right now. I wish it was happening in our backyard, but I'm so excited for the World Cup kind of to be coming here. I think that it should be like a perfect scenario, but there's a lot kind of happening out there in the news. And there's a lot, that is a little bit of a downer for like true soccer fans. And kind of speaking from that experience and being a part of, some of the forums that USA soccer fans are on and on the internet, there's a lot of, I want to say pessimism, but really sense of frustration about, the process in general. And I would say personally, I had been planning to attend World Cup games for probably ever since the tournament was announced that it was going to be on home soil. Now I'm thinking, there's probably no way I'm going to be able to make it, to a game. It's the games that I want to go to are on the other side of the country, which obviously isn't, a factor. But as I've talked about kind of the demand and the increase, it's really probably pricing out a large size of the audience that would be going to a destination like this. And so I do wonder about the overall like size and impacts that it will have, and whether it's going to kind of equally benefit a destination, or you know, there's going to be certain parts of the destination that are going to have an enormous, tremendous boon, but other parts of the destination that you know may not see the promise that you know they had hoped. Now that's pure speculation from my
Yeah.
end, and I'm
Well, that's
definitely
all
not an
we are on this
expert
show.
in
It's all
that,
about
but.
speculation. So you're in good company. So I'll say this, like the process itself, FIFA, I would call FIFA out. The process for getting tickets is atrocious. Like I myself have tried to, I'm in the lottery right now, but I wanted to go buy like England ticket. Obviously from England originally, I wanted to go buy England tickets. And when I go into the lottery, there's no way for me to say, hey, I want any England games regardless. I have to go into a lottery specific pick only the group's games right now. I can't even hedge and say I want to buy tickets to a quarterfinal or semifinal final if England's in it. The price is crazy, right? The third tier is like $250. The second tier is like 400 and something bucks, and then the top tier is like 600 and something bucks for a group game, like against, not great teams, and so super expensive. Plus, the only way you can buy tickets right now is you go into a lottery. And you have to put your credit card in. You don't know if you're going to get it or not, but you have to say all the games you want, and you could end up getting all of those games, right? So it's like, well, what if I only want to go to one game? Do I hedge and just pick one game, or do I pick three and risk having to buy tickets for all three? Because if you get accepted, it automatically charges your credit card. Like the whole process is ridiculous. Plus, if you have larger groups, like there's this whole weird convoluted system. Like if you want to match other parties together, like it's horrendous, and it's going to create this. Just I really fear for the scalping on this. Like I feel like a lot of people are going to buy bulk tickets, and then just the costs are going to go on the secondary market astronomical until the last minute, and then we'll see a price crash, and we'll probably end up with half empty stadiums in some of these games, and that's not a good look for America. So I think that's really frustrating. And then I think America in general is maybe overhyping the impact that this is going to have, and I hate to poo-poo it, but this is my opinion, but it's also based on the reports that have come out from other places that have hosted it historically. Like, and it's the same with Olympics and other big things. There's a big spectacle, there's a lot of hoopla, and it's a lot of community pride, but when you look at the long-term economic impact of these kind of events, it's not there. It just isn't there. It doesn't measure up. And all these predictions that it's going to be billions of dollars to each individual place, it's fabricated. Like it's based on best case scenarios, and that's not what the reality is. So I don't know. I feel like we're getting a little overhyped for the World Cup, and I hope we're not going
Yeah,
to be disappointed, but I feel like we might be.
it's hard for me to not get hyped at this point, because it is just like 6 months away. But at the same time, you know, I think the hope is that as a sport, you know, it really does make an impact in terms of the growth of that. And I think regardless of the impact of the event itself, you know, I think that there could be some difference between that and like something like an Olympics, where like this could help impact the trajectory of a sport. And you know, that could have
Maybe.
positive impacts for our destination to have, you know, those soccer teams be things, additional experiences that people want to participate
Sure.
in the area.
But I don't know if I buy it completely, because I think I've been here 25 years in this country, right? And I love soccer. When I came over, even before I had kids, I coached soccer at the YMCA. I've been ingrained in soccer since I've been here and coached a lot of teams, but also my kids have gone through soccer. America doesn't have a participation problem at the youth level, right? It actually, there's more kids playing soccer in America than any other country, right? The problem we have is there's competitive sports that don't exist in other countries, right? We've got really three or four that are significantly more lucrative, more fashionable, right? You got football, baseball, and basketball. You could even argue hockey in some areas. And so until some of those diminish, which I don't see happening anytime soon, the best
Yeah.
athletes are going to go to those leagues. So America's always going to struggle to be competitive in soccer because of the competitive nature of the other
Well,
sports. I don't
I
see
could
the
be
American team doing
a
great at
hopeful
this World
Englishman
Cup either.
speaking a little bit right now.
Yeah. Well,
No,
we're obviously
no.
going to win the World Cup, so.
Okay. All right. So this is where I got to come in and just shut some of this
You need to
craziness
shut down my
down.
jingoism?
Yeah. So first of all, I had to do a little bit of research. I'm a little bit of at a disadvantage to both of you because apparently this soccer fad outside of the United States is like a big deal. And so and I didn't realize the World Cup. Yeah, I think people find it interesting, right? And so I was able to, and okay, the shtick ends there. I'm not going to continue to be sarcastic about soccer, but I did want to go look at how realistic some of these claims of the World Cup being a flop are going to be. And I think there's a couple of realities to it that I think are true, and then I think there's a couple that might be a little overstated. Number one, the FIFA has had a world record volume of ticket requests for the World Cup than they've ever had, over 150 million, which would make it oversubscribed by more than 30 times. And so I think that, yes, the lottery system is a nightmare and all of that, but there's clearly demand. Now, one of the issues that there are in this World Cup versus World Cups in the past is that this World Cup is the first one that's hosted across multiple countries. So there's Canada, there's the US, and then there's Mexico. So you're already slicing up market share for the World Cup a little bit, right? Between multiple countries. There's also a lot of the geopolitical stuff going on that's going to limit international travel, especially to the US, compared to what it's been
I
in
don't
the
buy that
past.
argument at all. I don't think soccer fans care one iota. If they're following their team, they don't care.
Well, fair, but even projections today are that 60% is going to be domestic US attendees and 40% of the attendees are going to be international. And that's the lowest since Russia. Prior to that, in other countries, it was
For
70% or
sure, but
so.
I think that's more because of the demand from the US than it is from the lack of demand from outside.
Okay, that's fair. But from a travel perspective, even if that's the case, that's fewer international travelers coming, regardless of the reason that that's happening, right? And so I think that's something that's going to possibly lower the economic impact by not having as many international travelers and having more domestic travelers. But people are going, like, there's not going to be empty stadium seats. I think people are going to be in the stadiums watching the games, and it's going to be, now, are the economic impact, is it overstated? Possibly, yeah, because the volume of dollars that we're talking about for potential economic impact might be overstated, especially if it's fewer international travelers. But I don't think it's going to be a flop. And I actually think FIFA does enough research and development and exploration that if it wasn't a flop in Russia, it's not going to be a flop here.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to say it's going to be a flop. I'm saying it's problematic, and I do think there will be some empty seats at some games, or there'll be fire sale to fill up some of those. Probably not the England games, the Germany games, the Brazil games, but maybe,
You're
Curacao
right.
versus someone,
Everyone's going to want to go to the England games. There's no question about
for sure. I mean, I'm going to try. If anyone in any of those, so we're playing, I think we're playing in what, Dallas and I think Boston and Philly, maybe. I forget exactly where England's playing. So if anyone in those destinations wants to hook me up with some tickets, I would gladly accept them.
Wow.
Yeah. The big question about the World Cup is, though, what is America's vuvuzela going to be, right? So when it was in South Africa a few years ago, everyone remembers the vuvuzela, this big long trumpet thing that was making all the noise. And usually, and when it was in Mexico in '86, that's where the wave came about. Outside of America, you call it the wave. Everyone else calls it the Mexican wave because it started in Mexico '86. So that was the first on TV version of it. So what is America's contribution to the sport of soccer? I think we should decide right here, right now.
Man, I mean, there's a pit in my stomach, but my head right went very quickly to halftime show. Like, we already had a
Yeah.
halftime show, the Copa America. We're going to bring halftime shows to soccer events worldwide, and that's going to be because of soccer in the United States.
Boy, is
Wow.
that a contribution we want to be Known
I don't
for
know.
some of the halftime shows have been big losers lately in the in some of the big games I've seen. I don't know that I want that to be our contribution.
Maybe I wouldn't bet against it. I think pageantry in an expression of some of the things that America does better than any other country, right? Just celebration. So maybe so. I'm rooting for a successful World Cup. Like, don't get me wrong. I'm just concerned that it might not be, and economically and for England, it might not be. But I'm rooting for both. All right, Eddie. Sorry, we took a long time on that. So we'll jump right into your topic that you brought. So
Well,
the
no, I
floor
mean
is yours, sir.
it's always a pleasure to talk about soccer. Yeah, no, as I sort of said before, my background has been in content for a long time, and it's also been in data. So the kind of two worlds I know pretty well are about the storytelling side as well as like measurements and ROI. And we've worked with a whole host of different products out there to kind of measure, right, the impact of our marketing investment. The thing that has always been the biggest struggle is, and I've had this problem kind of in the top of my head for ever, really, as long as I've worked in DMO marketing. But what's the value of content? How do you put a value to, something that is really a creation, and it's not necessarily something that it only exists over a certain period of time and only reaches a certain audience? The potential for it is kind of in some ways everlasting, in some ways just long lasting. But there's a lot about kind of how we evaluate content that I think our industry sort of overlooks. And there's also some like really blatant things kind of happening, right? So, one thing is that social media has exploded. It's where, we are all spending our time. There's other things like YouTube, which again is kind of social media, but it's also sort of a streaming site, and it's exploded to the top place that people are consuming online videos at. So, there's these locations, and from 2018 in our visitor profile study, about 15% of people use social media as a pre-arrival resource. In 2025, that grew to 45%. And so there's just all this arguments to be or information to kind of be out there that people's attention are going to these places that we're not always the best at measuring at consistently. So I kind of I was a philosopher in college. I also have a degree in philosophy and really love John Rawls. So if I have this kind of Rawlsian idea here, let's pretend that we are starting new in a destination, and for the sake of the recent media, let's say that it's Hawkins, Indiana. So we're newly promoted a DMO at Hawkins. They have a annual marketing budget of about $5 million to promote leisure tourism and help improve the image of the destination. They don't have any baggage, right? So they really just want you to focus on, how are you going to capture the most attention, right? And the most positive impact for the destination. I think, and this is kind of my argument, that if it were up to me, I would almost orient a large part of that DMO as more of a like media production house, where you have more positions that are responsible for either creating content, working with local creators, the kind of creative minds of the destination out there, to really bring to light the story of what the destination is, all it has to offer, all of the history tours and haunted house tours that a place like Hawkins may or may not have. That would be my argument, but at the same time, it's very difficult because there's not really an attribution model to sort of suggest that. We are an industry that has been so driven by kind of measuring KPIs, year-over-year performance, and improving those. And I think one of the struggles is that, when it comes to storytelling, those KPIs are not quite as important as showing what you've created and letting kind of the audience speak for itself as to whether or not that was a good use of time or a good product. But you know, for us as DMOs in the real world, it's really risky to kind of orient around the world of creating content versus, you know, buying advertising and placing advertising. So anyways, I kind of just threw all that out at you guys. I'd love to get, you know, your thoughts and feedback. It's kind of been an idea that's been rattling around in my head, you know, for a very long time. So you know, let's have at it.
So let me ask you a couple of questions because we talk a lot about owned media on this channel, and what you're talking about is really falls into that owned media. I think you could argue if you were going to be Hawkins, you'd be as much about earned media as and owned media. You probably wouldn't need to do a lot of paid media, right? Because the notoriety of it, but you'd probably want to really invest in the experiences and things like that. Now, bringing it back to you and in St. Pete. Do you have an understanding of your current budget percentage wise, what's going to paid versus owned versus earned media? If you had a guesstimate.
I don't have the budget
Okay, so
key,
without if
you
you
know,
don't have the
exactly in front of me,
specifics,
but I
which way is it
do. Yeah,
swinging? Is it
I would
increasing in
say
any of those buckets?
we're certainly swinging into it. It's interesting because our transition is happening more on what we're moving our paid media towards versus saying we're going to take money out of a paid media channel and then put it into the production of a piece of content. It's very, you know, and I think as organizations that, you know, have kind of had a history of what they've done before, you know, you it tends to be I don't want to say easier, but you know, you know what performs and you know how to measure that
So
performance versus stepping out
there's a
of your
gravity
company
to the
immediately.
status quo, right? You tend to stick with what you have and iterate versus if you were starting from scratch. So you're saying that paid media may be evolving. So I will tell you from Visit Myrtle Beach perspective, we're not necessarily shifting budget from a bucket to a bucket, but the types of things we're doing, we're blending together more. So the types of paid media we're doing are more akin to owned media, right? That we're doing more. Rather than like an ad in a magazine, we'll do more of an advertorial content-driven piece versus a
Sure.
static ad. Does that make sense? That's where I think it's going. And Adam, you probably want to chime in here and talk a little bit about your new formula that you're. I don't fully buy it, but I think it's a good starting point, and I think we're going to see it evolve this year. But do you want to talk a little bit about the thing with trust, and
Yeah,
now you've added a new one?
I think I want to start by responding to one of the things that Eddie said, because I think it was really helpful in thinking about this. And that's the fact that if you were starting with no baggage, right, you'd probably make the destination more like a production house if there was no historical data or anything like that to go off of. I think one of the questions every destination marketer needs to ask is my plan getting results that I can justify or demonstrate this year versus am I crafting a plan that's going to have after 5 years much more impact than it would if I was just looking at 1 year. And with the way we're funded, I think we've documented that a lot on this show. The way we're funded actually is what causes us to create 1 year impact plans as opposed to multi-year initiatives that would result in a higher level of creativity, that would result in a higher level of content. I mean, you know, Stuart, you've talked a lot about Traveling the Spectrum, the show that you guys put together in Myrtle Beach. If we look at the impact that that's going to have on the destination over the course of 5 years, and that's the judgment it was going to have the entire time, the approach would be completely different than we did it. Now we have to show what it got us in the form of visitation immediately, right? And that makes it so much harder to take on these types of initiatives. So that's the one thing is I think I would like every destination marketer to think beyond the annual budget cycle in order to make a more significant impact. When we talk about what I believe to be the most realistic marketing equation for success today, it's that with so much noise and content and information that's out there, it's not like awareness is the issue. People can be aware of you and not give a crap about you. You need their attention. So step one is you got to get their attention. And then the moment you get their attention, you have to sell them trust. Trust is what they need because you, as much as we'd love to pretend it in the destination marketing space, I don't believe that we truly impact immediate direct response booking. I think we can get their attention. I think we can get their trust. And then when the circumstances are right, if we already got their attention and they trust that we'll be the right experience for them, the circumstances added in, that's what equals action. So attention plus trust plus circumstances equals action. And if we structure our marketing around that, yes, it's going to be much more difficult to show that immediate annual result, but I think we'll be in a much better place over the course of 5 years than we would be if every year we're building a kind of siloed annual plan.
So,
And
Adam, you know what's interesting is that equation that you, like I've struggled with it a little bit because I don't fully think it explains everything. But I was listening to your destination marketing podcast last night while I was taking out the trash, by the way. That's what I do while I'm taking out the trash is listening to your other
thank
podcast.
you.
But thank you. Well, number one, thank you for your shout out of this show. It was your resolute New Year's episode. It was great. Everyone should go listen to the Destination Marketing podcast.
Thank you.
But you were given this analogy, and I was struggling with it a little bit. But what occurred to me is it's not dissimilar to the approach that I stole from Tim Peter, a friend of the show who's been on the show before. He has an equation, which is the approach I brought to Visit Model Beach, which is content is king, customer experience is queen, and data is the crown jewels. And if you really focus on those three things, you're going to have success. So in this case, content is how you achieve the attention, the customer experience is how you build the trust, and the data is how you understand the context to be able to do it, right? So he it's interesting that now I actually buy it a little more because I see the analogy in a different way. Eddie, sorry I cut you off there. Go ahead. What were you going to
No,
say?
you're fine. I just wanted to like, of course, we are transitioning from like a more advertorial kind of style advertising, and we've done some really fun partnerships in the past year. Like we worked with Vox magazine, or I'm sorry, Vox, the media production company, and had some YouTube content created that we loved. I mean, and we're working on that. But I would even argue that I just think that our industry as a whole is not being really aggressive enough in terms of thinking about, it's not even necessarily a from a monetary investment, but oftentimes from a personnel investment. I'm kind of thinking about this. I don't know of a DMO that has like a YouTube creator as a staff position. But I think that YouTube is a channel that is so vital to, like, again, getting the attention of the world on a destination. Yet, I've spent a lot of time on, all of our DMO YouTube channels, and that's not how we're treating them. We're kind of just treating them as a digital asset management system for, like, the videos that we create. And I think too, one of the things that you guys did at Myrtle Beach that I really love was your creator series, where you invited people to kind of stay and come and create. And I think that there's so much opportunity out there within, a destination's local community, that there's a lot of creative people out there, and it doesn't necessarily have to be a staff position. And I know you guys have kind of mentioned this on the podcast, but kind of bringing people in from the community. Right now, we're talking about kind of a biweekly podcast, just to put on our YouTube content, because we know that podcasts on YouTube are really affecting some of that LLM kind of searches, and they're being picked up quite a bit, just in terms of growing your YouTube following. So, like, there's just so many opportunities out there, I think, to work with creative people, but it does take energy and time and kind of investment, and I don't always know if our energy and focus is always in the right places. It doesn't necessarily have to be a budget question, I don't think.
Well, I think it's something we've struggled with for sure at Visit Model Beach. I think we believe, as I think you do too, that one of our roles as a DMO is to be the storytellers of the destination. And I think the stories we should tell should be the grabbing attention. They should be diverse stories from different perspectives, different voices. And I agree with you. I'd love us to be a quote unquote content creator, right? In a true fashion, like us actually employ people that's what they do for us is content creator. But if we look at what content creation is, one is really, really hard, right? It's really hard to do that well. There's probably 1% of content creators or less actually end up getting any kind of following, right? We can create podcasts, we can create YouTube channels, we can do whatever. To actually create the content's not necessarily the hardest part. Building the audience is the harder part. And so how long are you willing to give your person or team to build that audience, right? And they've got to commit to it. Because if you look at a content creator, they live, breathe, sleep it. That's all they do. They're focused on it. And we as DMOs tend to spread people really thin between different roles. Even the podcasts we've tried to do, I'd say, we've learned a lot, but they haven't been amazing successes other than they've won some awards and that kind of thing. They haven't, in terms of audience building, haven't been tremendous successes. And maybe that's because we didn't put enough paid media behind it to build it. But it's just hard to continue to justify over 2, 3, 4 years that which is what it really takes. I was listening to a podcast the other day, which has over 400 million listeners, and it took them 5 years before they got any traction. Like for the first 5 years, they were like, "What are we doing wrong? What are we doing wrong?" And now they're one of the biggest podcasts in the world. So I think it's tough. We've tried multiple things. One, we've tried ambassadors, right? Local people that are our content army that can produce for us. That's tough. We've tried hiring families that are already content creators in our community and try to bring them under our umbrella. Keep doing what you're doing, but promote Malta Beach a bit more. That hasn't been that successful. We've done the content creator series. So I think what we're trying to do is like, let's try a lot of stuff. Because at the end of the day, I don't necessarily need to own the content. I just need to be that incubator. If I go all the way back to one of our first episodes with Sarah Peter, we need to be the incubator to tell the story, right? So we need to encourage and nurture others to tell the story. We just need to nurture that a little bit. Adam, it looks like you have something to add.
I have a little bit of a concern with what you just said, and my concern is you talked about this podcast that you followed that for 5 years wasn't successful, and then in the sixth year that they got to the point where now today they have 400 million listeners, right? And I think this is my big issue with the destination marketing space in general, is that everybody tries a content project 1 year and decides, joint with their stakeholders, that it didn't work. When in reality, over time, the intangible value that comes from creating that content and building over time, it's not foreseeable in a lot of cases. And I'll give you an example. I have been doing my podcast, the Destination Marketing Podcast, for since 2019, and at no point in the creation of that, for the first 3 years, could I have known that eventually I was going to build a relationship with you at Visit Myrtle Beach? Would I have known that I'd be on stage with you at Esto? Would I have known that I'd create a product in conjunction with a British firm, Destination Core, that was going to have 80 people register for the webinar that we're putting on next week? Like, none of that stuff I could have foreseen. And the only way to guarantee that none of that intangible stuff happens is to not do it and be consistent and continue. And that's my concern with the annual evaluation of success or failure of a project.
Yeah. So you have to do two things as DMO, right? One is you've got to think long term, have that cathedral thinking that we talked about on the show before. But two, it's almost like, and I've learned this mistake the hard way, because even some of these projects we've done that we've lauded on the show that I get a lot of credit for and our team has done a tremendous job, they're not universally liked by our board of directors and our stakeholders, right? We've gotten a lot of criticism for some of these things
Obviously.
that are perceived to be successes by the industry, but maybe not by the locals. And so we've sort of made the decision that we're downplaying some of that stuff. Some of the things we were sort of hanging our hat on early on and saying, this is our priority and like content and owned media. That's now, both budgetarily and in terms of what we talk about publicly is downplayed. So we're sort of still doing some of that stuff in under the radar a little bit. And so that as we it buys us the ability to have more a longer runway, so that when we get success, we can then shout about it a little more. But the environment forces us to do that, and it's not ideal.
I mean, I think that's the biggest struggle, that it's like, how do you create an environment where you're okay to fail and like keep trying new things? And I think you guys both kind of talked about like not giving up, and good things will come, and I agree with that. But I also think that like it's not necessarily the length of time that you're always trying a project, but how many times you're trying something new. And I do feel like, again, like our industry, we kind of keep on hammering the same things, whether that's like partnering with travel influencers to create content. I am so sick of working with travel influencers. I want to work with other creators in different spaces, and bring them in as part of a partnership to our destination. And I've seen this happening in other industries, and specifically, like, I think if we consider destinations as an industry, perhaps cruises might be our biggest like nemesis as kind of an industry that is not, about the destination. It's purely about the experience. Well, I guess it's a little bit about the 12 hours you might get in destination X or Y, but I think where they're partnering with creators outside of, the travel space. And I think it's really, I would think it's probably working for them. And that's something that we're not as an industry doing as much.
Well, I've long held the opinion. I don't share it publicly very often, but our team and our PR firms and everyone knows this. I despise travel, quote unquote, influences. I think it's the worst investment any DMO can make. I think there's zero real tangible ROI from it other than vanity metrics. I think just step back and think about what you're doing, right? You're paying someone that all they post about is all the places they travel to. So the audience is seeing every day or every week a different place that they've been to. Like it's the chances of you convincing that person that Myrtle Beach is the place to come are next to nothing. But I would much prefer to bring in content creators that have nothing to do with travel, that don't focus on travel, that have a loyal audience, and invite them to do their shtick, whatever their shtick is, in Myrtle Beach. Right, that's a lot more interesting. I have no competition then, and it's a lot more sticky. I'll give you an example. We work with this family that they've started traveling a little more now, but the whole thing was just them in their backyard and their environment, their community, doing things with their three young kids. I think at the time it was just two kids when we first engaged them, but we told them, reached out and said, "Hey, we'd love for you to come and just do a little series in Myrtle Beach." And we're not going to pay you, but we'll cover the cost for whatever. And these people were substantial. They hadn't really tapped into the travel market, but they had a few million subscribers. And we did like four videos with them. Each one ended up getting millions and millions of views. And we're still getting people visiting the businesses that they showcased today, like a couple of years later, that heard about it and saw it on their YouTube channel a couple of years ago, or they saw it recently because it's evergreen, right? So DMOs should not be using travel influencers, in my opinion. They should be finding content creators that are relevant to their audiences and bring them to their destination to create cool
That's
content.
a bold statement. I mean, that's something we probably need to do an additional episode on, if your opinion is that destinations should not be using travel content creators, but instead should use non-travel creators. That's something that we need some time to unpack. That's pretty radical as far as what the current status quo is in our space.
There are some niches to that, right? Or some caveats, like niche travel. Like I think if you're trying to specifically target certain audiences or showcase specific amenities, like I think about accessible travel, things like that. I think I would think that's more akin to what we should be doing. But I think a generic vanilla person that just travels from destination to destination and just says, "Look at me," it's a complete waste of time.
So if you're listening, sorry, Eddie, but if you're listening and that's an interesting topic to come on, and especially if you disagree with Stuart, I always like those. Come on and let's have that conversation, because I think that's one we need to unpack in a full episode.
That'd be
I'll
awesome.
come back here, but I unfortunately kind of agree with Stuart on this one. So I, you know, it would be a lot of saying, yeah, I agree with that.
Well, that's not what this show is about. Well, Eddie,
Yeah.
we are about out of time, my friend. I appreciate bringing this topic today. Do you have any final thoughts to share with the audience or takeaways from this conversation?
You know, not related to this conversation, but I just want to say that this podcast I think is really scratching an itch, and I truly appreciate being a part of it, and getting to be on it. You know, I've again been in the industry for some time, and I feel like, you know, this is a good forum for us to really kind of talk about real issues without feeling like there's, you know, literally 250 people out there in the audience. Obviously, you guys do have an audience, and this is a comfortable environment to sort of say, you know, these are some of the problems, or maybe some of the thoughts and ideas of, you know, the tourism industry right now. We don't necessarily have to, you know, end it in a specific conclusion. It's more just conversations between people, you know, in the industry that care about moving it forward. So really appreciate being on here and your guys' time.
Thank you, Eddie. I mean, when we
Yeah.
started the show, we wanted to have the conversations that were ha being had in the hotel lobby bar. We wanted to have them where other people could join in and be a part of that conversation and, you know, speak about the things that people were too afraid to speak about in public. So we appreciate you being a part of that and contributing today. If they want to find you, Eddie, what's the best way to do that?
You can find me on LinkedIn. You know, just search my name, Eddie Kirsch, with Visit St. Pete Clearwater. You know, you can email me at eddie@visitspc.com. Happy to hear from. I'm sorry. What are is the name of your guys' audience?
The
Again,
Desties,
the
part
Desties.
of the
Yes, the
the
Desti crew.
Desties are a part of the Desti Nation. So thank you for being on, Eddie. Adam, any final thoughts to you? Where can they find
No,
you?
this was really fun. Eddie, thank you for coming on. And I tell you what, anybody that's out there listening, be careful commenting on Stuart's LinkedIn, because you never know, it might end up with you being a guest on the show. I really appreciate it, Eddie. It was great to meet you, and appreciate you bringing the topic to us today.
Where can they find you, Adam?
Adam at thebrandrevolt.com. Find me on LinkedIn, or of course on Tourism IQ.
Thank you guys. You know, we got a lot of cool guests coming up. We're actually booked out. We're recording in January. We're booked out through March right now, we guess, but we're still looking for other really smart people to come on. And I got to tell you, Adam, I was really enthused. I was looking at our analytics the other day. December was our number one download month of all time, a 400% increase over last December. So we're definitely,
Fantastic.
to use Eddie's words, scratching that itch. So thank you all for being a part of the destination, and we want to continue to see that growth. Let's see if we can get another 400% increase between now and next December. But I'm hoping January is good. You know, people start with their New Year's
Yeah.
resolutions, and one of those is I'm going to listen to more podcasts. So we'll see a little spike in January, probably, hopefully. But
Hope
guys,
so.
thank you for listening. Please like and subscribe, leave comments, all that fun stuff, and tell a friend. Like, that's how we're going to spread the word. Is if you're getting something out of this, then think about someone else at your DMO or another that may get something out of these conversations. And of course, reach out to us if you ever want to come on the show as well. You're all part of the destination. We'd love to have you. Until next time, this has been Destination Discourse.
Thanks, everybody.
You know, those backroom conversations are always
Yeah.
very interesting, and kind of help.
Did you say back room or bathroom conversations?
I said backroom, but they sometimes start in
Sometimes,
bathrooms.
hey, yeah, sometimes it happens in the bathroom, wherever, right?
This is our ending.
All right.